So I went a little long this morning. I'm sorry about that, but I just get carried away. But the good news is, although I shall talk some this time, actually you're going to do most of the talking, and you're going to talk to each other. One of the things that attracted me to St. Mark's, I started working there about 5 years ago. How long ago was it? Almost 20 years before that, I was fresh out of my Bible college and a minister in, an assistant minister in a church. The church was very lovely. The Bible college may as well have been a UFO and kind of spat me out as this like alien in this place I was living in, because I just talk on garbled theology language that nobody can understand. They'd nod and smile. And they were very kind, but I was just weird, you know. I just couldn't, I was just talked a lot and didn't make much sense, I don't think. So I thought, Bible college are good for some things, but not everything. And I think I need to work a little harder at connecting with people and working out how to be a bit more helpful. So I took myself off to the introductory part of a counselling course in Christian counselling, which just revolutionised my life. It taught me how to both ask people the kinds of questions that would draw out of them what's going on for them and not feel the need just to be talking at them all the time, and how to know what to do in the moment that might actually be helpful, and when to know that they've got issues going on that are beyond me, you know, and when they might need some other kind of help. Now, it so happens that that particular course that I did eventually moved to St. Mark's, right, and has been running since then in various formats, one of which I'm going to tell you about today. And I just thought 5 years ago, I really do want to be a part of a Christian training place that is not only focusing on all the good things in the Bible and in theology that we heard about this morning, but that's also skilling people to be just great with others, you know. And just to sort of riff off that a little bit, I suppose you, like me, have lost count of the number of people who are very cheesed off at churches because they've got some story, and it often boils down to kind of just one story. At some point in their lives, their perception has been that they had some kind of need or yearning or want or something, and they went to a church, and their recollection has been of being either sort of fobbed off or ignored or kind of treated in a way that just left them feeling sort of angry and disconnected, you know? And churches don't want to be like this. My hunch is that most of the time that people are reporting stories like this, the church that's involved didn't particularly want to be like that towards people. And indeed, it might not have been even as huge as it looms in the storyteller's mind, but something has happened so that the people there just sort of haven't quite been able to put it together to really connect well with that person. So what I want to do today, now, is make this one a lot more practical. I just want to take you through a bunch of guided little experiences of listening to one another and some tricks of the trade that help you do that a bit better. And even just to get these tricks under your belt will be really valuable, I think, for your life together and for working with folks who come in the door. And if you want to take it further, I'll tell you how we do that. Now I have a little bit of a problem here because I usually have to rely on my computer, which is up the back, so I don't quite remember what's coming next. I've done all that. Keep going. Go, go, go. So one of the things that we're going to need you to do is, and this is, you know, just slightly intense moment, but we need you in, you need to just pick three little triads, we call them, group three. So, and each of the people in this triad is going to have a different job as the hour unfolds. You're all going to take turns at being either a listener, a speaker, or an observer. But in the first instance, we might need to rearrange the furniture just a tad. But if you can, or someone's going to have to sit in the row in front. But if you can just organise yourself in little knots of three, that would be really helpful. Thanks. Right. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to have an experience of the bad thing of what not to do, and it probably won't work because you're all too polite. But we'll give it a go. I want you to pick two people who'll do the talking and one who's observing. So do that. Just pick. Okay. Good. You got that. Two talkers, one observer. I'm going to put the stopwatch on for, I don't know, a minute and a half, I guess, or a bit less, who knows. But the talkers, there you go, 2 minutes, to impress upon your partner one of these. How great your kid is, what your last holiday was like, whether Australian troops should be in Afghanistan, that women should have more influence, or some problem in your family. Pick one. And the two speakers are going to go at each other, trying to impress their view or what's on their heart to the other person. And we're just going to report back at the end of this time to see what that was like. You got me? You hear me? You hearing me? The speakers can pick different topics. Yeah. No, actually, I've got a better idea. This will work better if you both pick the same topic. So, yeah, agree on a topic that you're going to talk about. And then off you go. You're each then trying to impress upon each other your view on that topic. All right. So, I've changed the instructions a bit. Pick a topic, same topic. Do that now. Yes. It's a bit of a, like I said, it's a bit artificial, but you're actually in this moment. It's what not to do. It's an experience of actually not listening very carefully, other than just trying to talk. Okay, off you go. Yeah, choose the same topic. That'll actually work better. Yeah. Time's up. What we've tried to simulate, possibly imperfectly there, and I just want to hear from you, from some of you, what that was like in a moment. I've tried to simulate what I reckon I just hear all the time as I drift around listening to people chat to each other in modern Australia, and happens in churches too. It's what you call parallel talking, you know, where everyone wants to be heard and we're all just rabbiting on about our thing, and the fact that you've talked about your kid is the excuse for me to talk about my kid, and they talk some more about their kid and I talk some more about my kid. Or, but I have a view on troops, well, I've got to say my piece, and then my mate's got to say his piece, and I've got to say my piece back to him because he hasn't understood what's right, and then he says his piece back to me, and I keep saying my piece back to him because he hasn't understood what's right. And so on. Have you seen that? Have you been there? Yes? So what was it like? What did it feel like? What did it actually feel like in your guts, in your innards? Did that feel good? No. Yeah, I know. This is the problem. It is a bit artificial. You do this with Christians. And dare I say, I'm going to actually say that a lot of women are a lot better at this than a lot of men. You'll do it with women. They just can't. They don't. Come on. I'm here to be kind to my neighbours, so they won't do it. But, yes, that's, people can be pretty practiced in a good way already. So trying this on is hard. But have you been in an experience like that? Your family and the wider community? It is the absolute epitome of aloneness, isn't it? To just not be heard. Am I right? Yeah. Did it touch on that a little bit for you? Yeah, no, that's all right. I mean, I'm not here to make you feel something. The thing that is, done that. Yeah, oh, that's the observers. So observers in triads where they did a good job of talking over each other. What did you see? What did you notice? Sorry? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Did you think there was a meeting of minds in those different points of view? Yeah, that's right. So that's the first thing you'll see. You'll often see people doing this where it's either a clash, but sometimes not a clash. It's just, clearly people are not having any sort of traction on each other. Yeah. What else did the observers see? Maybe I didn't let you go long enough. I maybe should have let you do this for 15 minutes, but, did anyone see frustration? Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Sort of grandstanding question. Yeah. We'll see that a lot in other conversations. Yeah. Any other observers? Yeah. 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 Yeah, it's true. Indeed, you've nailed something there too. People who just talk all the time, have that effect, don't you? Just wander off because you seem happy. You're talking about yourself. Fine. Absolutely. So, yeah, it's only a little bit of a very imperfect exercise, but it's attempting to get at, this problem that we often see. When do you see at church episodes where there's two talkers and no listeners? Is that ever an issue? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Absolutely. That's right. A few well, non-intrusive, well-crafted questions can be incredibly encouraging for a new person. And hospitality can sometimes take the form. Hospitality is often going to take the form of some really nice, kind questions, not just verbaling on about where the loos are and where the baby change is and what we do here and blah, 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 you know, because you often feel a bit of a pressure to sort of fill the space, you know. Yep. I'm going to. We're going to get to those, slowly but surely. guts of all this is that we absolutely all want deep down to be really, really, really seen. Not just looked at, actually seen and, understood and valued, you know. We want to be known. That's just part and parcel of what it is to be a human. And everyone brings that into every human interaction, this longing to be seen and understood and valued. Psalm 139, I'm going to read to you because it is illustrative of this point in an extremely profound way. No, stay in your triads. You're going to keep, we haven't finished with those triads yet. You wait. That sounded scary. You'll delight in your triad. Psalm 139, I'll read to you. I'm sure you've heard it, but it's spectacularly profound. Just before I begin, there's two sections in this that'll catch your interest. There's one verse in this that's often used, fair enough, in discussions about abortion. But I want you to hear about its context. It wasn't originally there for that purpose. So try and hear into what it is saying about human beings. There's also, a section, again, like I mentioned before, on, the psalmist getting really cross about enemies and wanting God to deal with them. So we always find it a bit jarring, but you've just got to hear it as, the psalmist just really longing for all that stuff where people are harmful to each other and totally the opposite of how God is towards people to each other when people are the opposite of how God is. The psalmist wishes that would stop. So with those two caveats in mind, Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down, when I stand up, you understand my thoughts. From far away, you observe my travels and my rest. You are aware of all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you know all about me, Lord. You have encircled me. You have placed your hand on me. This wondrous knowledge is beyond me. It is lofty. I'm unable to reach it. Where can I go to escape your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to heaven, you are there. If I made my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I live at the eastern horizon or settle at the western limits, even there, your hand will lead me. Your right hand will hold on to me. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light around me will be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night shines like the day. Darkness and light are alike to you. For it was you who created my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I will praise you because I have been remarkably and wondrously made. Your works are very wondrous, and I know this very well. My bones were not hidden from you when I was made in secret, when I was formed in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw me when I was formless. All my days were written in your book and planned before a single one of them began. God, how precious are your thoughts to me. How vast their sum is. If I counted them, they would outnumber the grains of the sand. And when I wake up, I am still with you. God, if only you would kill the wicked. You bloodthirsty men, stay away from me who invoke you deceitfully. Your enemies swear by you falsely. Lord, don't I hate those who hate you and detest those who rebel against you? I hate them with extreme hatred. I consider them enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my concerns. See if there is any offensive way in me. Lead me in the way everlasting. So you couldn't get a more perfect statement of what it is like to be deeply and totally known inside out. You know, even more than you can know yourself. And the reason why that is so beautiful to us to hear is because it's an indication of how God has made us, that God has made us to be people in relationship who are deeply, totally known to God. And then what starts to happen when the psalmist realizes this in verses 17 and 18, the psalmist starts to kind of reciprocate just in a tiny way back to God. God, how precious are your thoughts to me? And yet suddenly this realization, I can't even begin to understand you like you understand me. But even so, this knowing of the other is starting to dawn on this psalmist as being absolutely what it's all about, unlike the wicked who haven't got a square one and who just hate God and don't seem to care about deep knowledge of one another. That's a sort of sidebar in this psalm. But the reason I read it to you is because our interest really in being a community where people can walk in and feel like somebody cares to know them is to be a community that in that way reflects the heart of God in some way. Now, we're never ever going to be able to so listen to someone and so know them to be like God to them. And it's really important that people discover that ultimately they'll get those needs met in God. But even so, we can be like little samples of that by being able to connect with them in new ways. The problem, though, for us is that in the normal cut and thrust of things, we kind of sabotage that. We sabotage that possibility of really knowing and connecting with others as a glimpse of how brilliantly God does that with us. We sabotage that by, firstly, what I call reactivity. You'll always notice, when I describe this, you'll immediately think of others. What's harder is to notice when it's going on in ourselves. It's reactivity is when the moment somebody says something, you're triggered to just say something back, and particularly to be angry back. I'm really taken by this verse in James that often I don't think really gets enough airplay among Christians. You must understand this, my beloved. I mean, there's reasons why this occurs in his first chapter. Suffice to say that it occurs as one of the very first things he says. And he says with such force, you must understand this, beloved. You know, this is not a lightweight comment. Let everyone be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. And he's kind of picked on in the positive and then two positives and one negative on that which so needs to be said, because folks are pretty much by nature slow to listen, quick to speak and quick to anger. That's modern Australia. That's you and I. That's just the way we are. So we've got to constantly challenge this reactivity by working at being quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger. Oh, and by the way, our anger does not produce God's righteousness. The angry Christian who thinks that by being sort of angry about all this nasty stuff that's going on out there does not bring about God's righteousness. But just for the time being, between you and I and each other, what does it look like to be quick to speak? So the first way that we sabotage it is by this sort of unthinking reactivity. The second way that we sabotage it is by what I call pressure to speak. You know, some people have, because they want to be known, because they want to be heard, they've developed a habit of just always needing to say the next thing, say the next thing, say the next thing. I remember, I mean, I think I've, you know, like all humans, I've struggled with this. When I was in my teens, when your mind is very active, I remember I literally had this sort of crazy little metaphor that was like I had so much to say to everybody around me. It was like there's this little straw, I couldn't get it out fast enough. It was a pain in the butt to be with, but this pressure to speak can really possess us, you know? And the Proverbs are really often onto this. You know, the Proverbs have got a lot to say about who to be and how to carry yourself out in public space. The wise lay up knowledge, so the wise are pictured as people who are just always kind of taking it in, absorbing, you know, truth and storing it up. But the babbling of a fool brings ruin near. There's always, sadly, in the Proverbs, at least a correlation between what a fool someone is and how much pressure to speak they have. When words are many, transgression is not lacking. This worry in the Proverbs that if we talk too much, transgression, bad stuff, is just hovering off, not, you know, near at hand somewhere. Often through things like self-deception, because the person who talks too much can be self-deceived. The prudent are restrained in speech. So there's a definite gentle but firm question mark against you in Scripture if you're someone who simply finds yourself talking most of the time. And so in these two ways, in churches, because churches are only places loaded up with spiritual, you know, coronavirus that we're here try and learn how to, under God, how to heal. Churches are going to be places where there's reactivity and pressures to speak just because we're human. So let's talk about how to challenge those tendencies. Here's another great quote. There's a famous Christian, I don't know how you describe this bloke, Henri Nouwen. Anyway, he's pretty famous. We are unable to give ourselves in love when we are not aware of ourselves. And unfortunately, if we're talking all the time, we're actually not really aware of ourselves enough to just pull back and actually hear what's going on for someone else. And so that's sad, because I don't think most Christians want to be people who aren't loving, but unfortunately it gets in the way. The incapacity to listen prevents that. It is said that we are people who, even at our best, even when you're trying, even when you're really working at it, they reckon that we remember between about 25 to 50% of what we hear. And so even when we're working at it, we kind of hope the important parts stick. You hope the important parts are captured in your 25 to 50%, but, you know, maybe they're not. So one of the things that I want to coach you in a little bit is in checking questions. You keep checking back with someone that you've heard right. And there's some good ways to do that, that just double check with people that you're getting it. And that sort of ups your percentage. And again, I'll give you some actual phrases and so on soon. But the other thing that causes that sort of percentage number to go downwards is all the little inner distractions that are going on when we're in a conversation. What are they? What are they for you? What do you get distracted about when you're trying to have a conversation with someone? You can be brave and fess up. What do you start thinking about instead? Sorry, out the back. Next week, absolutely. You're planning your calendar. Yep, absolutely. I was doing that just yesterday with someone. Thank you. Right, yes, yeah. And particularly if you've got little kids, it's where are they or what are they eating? Have you remembered to bring this or do this or... Yes, so that's a distraction. Yeah, any others? Yeah, that's right, yeah. I've been married a bit over 30 years, and my wife, I'm pretty impressive, because we're 30-something years into it, and I'm now slightly, dimly, tiny bit aware that if she interrupts me while I'm doing something, it's not an interruption, and it's okay for her to ask to engage with me, and it's okay for me to put down what I'm doing and focus on her. It's only taken me 33 years to sort of dimly get to this, because always the next task and the thing I'm working on, of course that's far more important. I mean, I'm a terrible guy a little bit, so I'm sure you're better than that. But I've got to battle with this all the time, just switching off from the task to actually eyeball and listen to the person in front of me. These distractions are really key scaffold to get past them. Are these questions, these checking questions, this sort of coming back to a person saying, oh, so what you're saying is, I'll write this down for you. What you're saying is blah, blah, blah. Have I got that right? Oh, tell me more about that. Oh, so by that, do you mean this, this, this? This habit of just asking people to expand on what they're saying, it'll help with your distractions. It'll help them to feel heard. That's what we're sort of grappling with here. So I want to, before we get to those sort of specifics, we want to do the same thing again. This time we don't want two speakers. We want one speaker, one listener, one observer. And we're going to swap these after 2 minutes each. So we're going to have a total of 6 minutes. Because I want everyone to have a turn at being each. And in each 2 minute, you know, bracket, the listener asks the speaker to tell them about something that has happened to them in the last week. And the listener uses minimal responses, but just letting the speaker know that they've been heard. Okay, so this is two things. The listener is going to work really hard to avoid that pressure to sort of speak back and say about their thing. And they're going to do things like look at the other person. I'll have a little list in a moment, a bit later. Look at the other person. They say something, you'll listen. If you didn't hear it, go, sorry, say that again. Just all the things that we do to signal that the other person is being heard. And then we won't do the third thing, the 1 minute thing. We'll do that in the big group. So we'll have 2 minutes where each gets a turn to be a listener, a speaker, an observer for a total of six. Is that okay? Happy? Because I kind of want you to feel, just remember to feel how good it is to be really focused on and listen. So, off you go. First 2 minutes. It's definitely true that for some people who are full-on introverts, the talking job is a bit hard. I get that. But also, put up your hand if when you were speaking, it would just felt really good to be focused on. Yeah? Any takers? Yeah? Yeah, generally that's the case, isn't it? It feels so good that it's an experience that, like all good things, got to share it around, you know? That's the point of having a listening church, is we're sharing around that blessing of being heard. And I suppose those poor folks who are sort of over-talkers know that that's a good feeling, but unfortunately, it's often due to various pressures in our lives we get like this. You kind of want that feeling back, but people can't keep giving it to you because you're overdoing it, and so people drift away from you, and that makes the feeling of loneliness worse, so you talk more, so you get into a vicious circle. And we have to challenge that in ourselves, but we also, a really good way that a church can help is just sharing around the listening enough for folks like that, that they can have a go, and eventually one day having a quiet yarn to them to say, you know, it'd be good if you could give some of that listening energy back to people. One of the kind of rules for being a listener is trying to just park our own mental stuff to the side. Did you find that doable or hard or a bit of both? Any thoughts about how to get past those distractions and really focus on the other? Oh, no, how we'll do this. We'll ask you. So those who are observing, right? So this is a question for when you were observing the speakers and listeners. When you thought the listener was doing a good job, what sorts of body language were they doing? What were they doing to really focus? Nodding the head? Yep. Eye contact? Yep. Yep. Ask questions? Yep. Yep. Facing them? That's right. Yep. So you can literally put on all of those, not put on in a kind of fake way, but you can actually wear those sort of ways of being towards another, and it gets you in the listening mode, you know? It wires you into them. There's a, what have we got next here? I want to flick past that to something on my slideshow. So yeah, there's this, if you're a person who kind of responds well to these little acronyms, this is a silly one because it's not SOLAR, it's SOLER, which doesn't really spell anything, but nonetheless, squarely face the person, open posture, meaning not great to kind of listen. That leaning in a little bit, that maintaining eye contact, not in a kind of freak out kind of way, but you know, and just relaxed. Those simple steps, if you're able to adopt just that, never mind the little questions to ask, if you're able to adopt just that, you'll immediately be a better listener because your whole self is engaged with the other person. You don't have to be a genius to do this stuff. This is what's great about it. You just tap into, try and get your mind's eye out to look at what you're doing. And one of my habits that my wife absolutely hates, and with good reason, is I'll just sort of sit side on her and across my legs, and I'll look up into space, and I'm just feeling good. But I just feel like I'm totally disconnected. Like I am actually, I like to believe I'm listening, but it's a bad habit, you know, because she feels like I don't care. And it's so easy for me to challenge that by just doing this solar thing. such a simple trick. Nah, that's not come out nearly clearly enough. So forget that. Sorry, I'll move right along. Just to fill out that a bit, it's that looking at the speaker that really helps with that distractedness thing. You can't really stop that by willpower. Oh, I've got to stop being distracted. Every time you tell yourself to stop being distracted, you get more distracted. You distract yourself about how bad you are at being distracted. Just go down that rabbit hole, you're gone. The looking at someone is how we're not distracted. It's actually the brain's way of being not distracted, is to look at the thing that we want to interest us. Not preparing advice or your own story or rebuttals of what the person is saying. I don't know if you do that. Of course you do that. We all do this. We have this kind of wiring inside us when people are talking that we'll be lining up, we'll be queuing up the next little mini speech. And so to the extent that you can just sort of just nudge that one away internally, give yourself a little giggle that you're doing it, nudge it away and then go back to the S-O-L-E-R thing, that can really help. Keeping that noticing of my posture, if I'm open. And here we're starting to get into the questioning. What do the checking questions look like? So am I right in hearing that? Or have I got you right? Are you saying that? Blah, blah, blah. So sorry, your son was in where? And sorry, what made him be there? Just say that again. You know, the actual checking questions just to check that you've heard right. It's really good to do this because it's just normal to mishear people and to try and say it back to them so they can say, yeah, that's it. Or no, that's not right. Can I check I've got that right? And then you, in a little mini summary, so what you're saying is it was a tough week because of the stress related to that, or because, no, it wasn't that. It's just that I just feel exhausted, you know. So being able to check in with what you think you're saying and giving them the opportunity to correct is going to really help. And because of that figure I stated earlier that we take in 25%, usually when you do these checking questions, don't feel bad if you only get 50% of them right. You know, like you're often going to, your check-ins will be wrong. So don't feel miffed. You've actually learned something. So it sounds like you're really, really, really just had enough that day. No, it wasn't that I'd had enough. It was that I was really angry because so-and-so had done something. You know, just to actually tap into what's going on to the person by checking you've heard it. So I want you to do the triads again, same as before, but the listener's now going to be experimenting with, and this will be kind of weird. It always feels a bit artificial when you take somebody else's words on your own lips and you'll all know that you're just doing what I told you and that'll sort of feel freaky, but don't worry. Can you guys read that up the back? These are the sorts of forms of words that can be really helpful, and I'll get Bernard to print this sheet off. Three columns, ways of just sort of mirroring back to people what they're saying. Center column if you're a bit unclear on what they're saying. Third column if you're trying to clarify what they're saying. I mean, they're all a bit similar, those columns, but the troops in Afghanistan. So you think the troops shouldn't be there because the way you see it is blah blah blah. And the person will either go, yeah, that's it, or no, and they'll say it again. From your point of view, or you feel blah blah blah. It looks to you as if, or it sounds like you did or thought something, or you're telling me that something. So what's happening to you is blah blah blah. From what you're saying, it seems as though. So what you're telling me is, you know. So these are phrases you'll recognise, and they're just reminders, really. In the middle, if you're feeling a bit uncertain, this is just a hunch, but it sounds a bit like what's happening for you is that you were really stressed that day, or I guess when that happened, you felt uncomfortable, or you felt angry, or you felt, you know, and you are guessing, and they'll soon enough tell you if that wasn't it. I can't help thinking that maybe X, Y, Z. It's maybe off base, but blah, blah, blah. And then the key being with those middle ones, you let the speaker correct you, actually putting it out there precisely so that they can tell you whether you haven't got it right. And then when they correct you, oh, right, I get that now, see that now. Of course, that makes sense. So the moment we're having that kind of interchange with each other, the other person is feeling heard, which is what they long for, they're yearning. If you want to clarify something, I'm not sure this is right, but you felt sad or you felt lonely. I keep wondering if whatever you're wondering as they're talking to you. Are you saying that, blah, blah, blah? Or make a little comment on what they're saying. Is that what you mean? Am I hearing you right? Is that what you're saying? Is that how it is? You see? Now, just to sort of try these on for size, and you won't, like, I think in 2 minutes you'd be kind of weird if you got through all of them, okay? But what I want you to do now in the triads is each person takes a turn at saying something, just saying something about something that is a little tough for them right now, and I don't want it to be something sort of soul-destroyingly
searingly tough, you know, but something that's just a bit difficult. So the speaker's getting a chance just to unburden a little bit about something that's a little hard, that they're wrestling with a bit. So you speakers, you're going to have to help your listeners a bit. Pick a topic that gives them the opportunity just to dive in a bit with some of these kinds of questions. Because we want the listeners to be able to practice these checking questions. Does that make sense? Are you good with that? And it's all right, listeners, if you sort of stumble over it and rephrase it, and that's fine. We're just practicing here. We might actually go for about 2.5 minutes with each of these because we're dealing with something a little tougher. Okay, off you go. Yeah, good question. That's a really good question. So sorry, let's just focus on this for a sec. It wouldn't really be that great if, someone's just in the middle of it and you say, so what you're saying is blah, blah, blah. You know, like it's, you're looking for the natural break in their flow of speech when they're maybe just having a little pause. Or if they really have lost you and they're still going, it's okay. People don't mind it if you say, hang on, if you just back up a step, can I just check on what you just said? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it is genuinely there for when you're not quite with them, you know? And, for folks that are sort of pretty rapid fire talkers, even they don't mind if you say, hang on, sorry, you just said this thing. Is what you meant X, Y, Z? Or can you just clarify that a bit? So does that help? Yeah, so it's either in the little spaces or it's when you are actually a bit, wait, I missed that. Because people are ultimately going to appreciate it if you're taking the time to really so focus on what they're saying that you want to get it right. So, okay, off you go. Thank you for doing that. It's a little kind of, can be a tad scary to put yourself through such things. I just want to give you, some final tips. We're nearly done. We'll have lunch soon, but, some final tips, what I call the rule of thirds and the place of lament. So when you think about it, rule of thirds. When you think about it, every conversation with someone is probably going to have a likely time frame depending on where you are. And I don't want you to overthink this, but if you're sitting down to have a chat with someone, over lunch, say, now. Let's say we've got an hour for lunch. Let's say there's two of you. Let's say that for argument's sake, you're dividing that time and each person, you're focusing on each person for half an hour. So let's say that just by the seat of the pants, you've got about a half an hour. You're really focusing on someone being a good, you know, good listener. Break the half hour, you guess about how long you've got into thirds. The first third being, just the very, very kind of quiet nodding, not saying much, listening, okay. Just letting it all wash over you and just going along for the ride. Goodness, really? Oh, that sounds bad. You know, just those little sort of, you know, if you're a bloke, just, you know, just those little odds and ends that just indicate that you're on board. The second third, only those checking and clarifying questions. Just the, okay, so I'm sort of hearing from this XYZ. So you're really starting to zero in on their story. And only if it's appropriate and only if needed. If something hard is going on or they're starting to pour their heart and soul out or they're telling you about something tough, only in the final third, only then, making any comments or suggestions, okay? Because we always think that we've got something useful to offer someone. But we're usually too quick to say it. And I've found again and again, if when I observe this rule of thirds, always, that sort of clever comment or advice or whatever the thing in my head that they need to hear that I've first thought of turns out not to be what's needed. Like without exception, I find that as I've properly listened and zeroed in on what's going on for someone, It's only later in the conversation where I've actually got something actually useful to say. Why? Well, because I've taken the time to start to really know what they're about, what's going on for them, as opposed to my guess about what they're about and what's going on for them, which are always different. My initial guess and what they actually need are two different things. So this rule of thirds can be just fantastically useful for giving people a really good experience in the first place of being heard. And then if your little comment or suggestion or advice is needed and it does hit the mark, which is more likely if you've done the rule of thirds, sometimes they go, oh, that's great. I think I never thought of that, or I never thought to try that, or gee, that's a really good point, you know. But you'll often only get that response if you're given it time. If you've been too eager and tried to throw in that first, you've probably thrown in the wrong thing, and okay, thanks, you know. So this is a really helpful little tip. That's true. I'm being a bit artificial. So it's, if you're spending the whole afternoon with someone, yeah, this doesn't work. Totally agreed. If it's you've bumped into someone after church, those conversations sort of go along for, I reckon you can sort of ballpark it. They'll be 15, 20 minutes and then you go on to the next person. You know, I mean, it's sort of there's a rough and ready rule of thumb about how long each conversation takes where. I think, is that, might not ring true for you, in which case maybe you've got to adapt this. but I just reckon that certainly in my world, there seem to be those conversations that go for about 15 or 20. There seem to be those conversations that go for about an hour. There seem to be a few half-hour ones. You know, it does sort of fall out into blocks of time that are somewhat predictable. But if that's not the way it is for you, I don't want to force that. Don't use my method if that doesn't fit your world. But the basic plan is still a good one, to give it plenty of time, to just let them be heard, and then a little bit more checking in with them, and then saving up anything useful you might have to say until later, is a valuable tool. So that's that one. And secondly, I'll just read this out. Please don't solve or make light of hard things, no matter how uncomfortable you feel. Sometimes all there is weeping with those who weep, mourning with those who mourn. Which, of course, comes straight out of Scripture. Good example of this is Psalm 88. The psalmist has nothing. This is the one psalm in the Bible where there's no sort of happy ending. It's just dark all the way through, and that sort of, it's the only one like this, but it signals to me that there are just times when all somebody's got is just bleakness. And we don't have the fix. And simply hearing them and going, that just sounds so horrible. I'm so sorry to hear that. And I'm not going to try and give them advice. Or I'm not going to try and make light of it. Oh, you'll feel better tomorrow. Or, oh no, this will come good. You know, it's so tempting to do this with relationship breakdowns. Oh, I'm sure he'll come back to you. Oh, I'm sure that child will be back in your life. You don't know that. Sometimes we've just got to sit with the discomfort of they're in a really dark place and you don't know what's going to happen and neither do they. And that is really hard to do because we've got that need in ourselves to make the problem go away so that they won't feel so sad and so that I won't have to deal with it. That's not weeping with those who weep. To just listen into it and go, oh, that is just gobsmackingly horrible. I'm so sorry to hear that. And you stop. Is far more healing and helpful for the person than making light of it. You with me? And this is a habit in Scripture that I don't know why, but somewhere, and it's not, I'm not having a go at you guys, this is pretty much every Christian church, somewhere along the line, we lost track of that theme in the Bible where you do lament. We've got a whole book on it called Lamentations, you know, where you actually let people pour their heart out about what's horrible. You know, God can take it. God can take it in Lamentations. God can take it in Psalm 88. Yet somehow in churches, we've sort of drifted into this need to fix sadness or make it that if people are sad, sort of they shouldn't be, or they're overdoing it or something like that. And that's not going to let people feel heard and listened to. So the place of lament in people's lives and in the life of our time together is,
really important. The other great thing, not great thing, that's the wrong word. The other thing about allowing lament is you don't have the responsibility then of trying to fix it for them. Like, to just enable them to be sad. Like, if they've got such huge problems in their life and you're just listening, where do I begin with this? Well, you don't begin anywhere other than to say, that sounds so terrible. I'm so sorry to hear that. And you're freed from the over-responsibility of trying to fix it. So, that's pretty much it. When we do this, we've got this graduate diploma of pastoral counselling. I've given you a little tiny taster. If you go out the back, you'll see, the other lady with glasses. I forgot we have two glasses, ladies. This is, our courses in pastoral counselling. Like I said, this is the thing that, one of the things that lured me to St. Mark's back in the day. Those little triad things, although it can be pursued online, like all of our courses, there are several subjects where you do come to Canberra for residential school for 3 or 4 days, and you just get drilled in those little triads over and over and over, practicing, what we call micro skills. The little turns of phrase and body language of focusing on someone, and you do get really good at them. You get much better at them, and better and better and better at them. And you have people giving you feedback about how you're going with that, and it turns you into someone who's really adept at helping people in distress. And I love this course. I think it's amazing. It's gone gangbusters this year. We've got a lot of people in it, because I think there's so much distress in the community. So we need more and more people with these skills. I forgot to mention this morning, all of the courses that are mentioned in the brochures are also in our main prospectus. And I have enough of these for you to take one. There's a little bit of an art to knowing how this is laid out, but it's very clear once you get the hang of the contents. And if you browse through this, you'll get much more of a sense of what we do. So I might just... thanks. Yeah.
I was going to wrap up.
No, you wrap up. That's good. Thank you. Thank you. That'd be good.
Just here we'll pray.
Yeah, thank you.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for your goodness to us. You're a God who wants to bless your creation. We thank you for your salvation story we heard about this morning. And we do thank you that you're a God who, as we hear your scriptures, you want, you do know us, and you want us to know that you know us. We pray that we might take on your character as we want to be people who want to know others around us. We might encourage them, and they might know that they are loved by you and by your people. And so we also thank you for the provision of lunch. We thank you for all your grace to us in rain, in lunch, in fellowship, in your word, all in Christ. And we thank you in your name. Amen.
I was going to say too, my intention with each of these is that you should feel totally free to come to whichever seminars that are scratching or you're itching. The one after lunch is about aging and about thinking about aging. Don't think that that's just for if you're old though. Like, I actually want us all to ponder both our own aging and ministry to those who are aging, whatever age we're at. And then at the end of the day, we'll do the one about church life. Yeah.
Thank you, Andrew.
Church life one? Helping you as a member of a church who may have some or be pondering some kind of leadership role to think about what we call the governance of the church, which sounds like it's an ugly sounding word, but it's the details about how this place runs and how we participate in that and how we can do that better. So I'm not going to bore you with all these laws and rules and that, but we just want to talk at a high level about how we can run churches together well so that they're more like gardens and less like jungles.